culture is a pretty important thing in terms of the things that define us, the things that we expect, the things that we would know about. And so ultimately, some funny things that have happened in the terms of, you know, people coming to this country and, you know, how they're not understanding American culture. So one individual, kept hearing about ice cream sandwiches, but he'd never seen one. So he tried to take two pieces of Wonder Bread and put ice cream in the middle of it. Not too very successful or tasty in the context of that. One woman talks about her father, you know, smoking a cigarette outside their house, and the mailman comes by. They start a conversation, and the mailman leaves and says, "See you later." And the father stayed outside 45 minutes expecting he was going to come back. And so again, culture, an important thing. And you might be asking, how does this apply to our sermon? But ultimately, we're going to be engaging in the book of Galatians. And you may not know in terms of one of the major questions that come is in the introduction to the book of Galatians is just, who are these Galatians? I mean, it's the only letter that Paul writes to kind of a region, if you will, or a people. Like, you know, it's the church in Ephesus, it's the church in Corinth, the church in Rome. So here it is, him writing a letter to a region that would include various cities and peoples and so on and so forth. So I will not bore you with all the details I could. I could do five messages on the North Galatia theory or the South Galatia theory. And I'm not going to do that, but you do have to recognize that's an issue, you know, coming into the book. So again, is Paul addressing the churches he visited first, or is he, in terms of the book of Galatians? And so in terms of just a location, who were the Galatians, just realize even how this map represents the area or region of Galatia. You know, how you look at maps like this, and sometimes people represent it as being bigger or smaller in terms of how they're, you know, identifying the information that's coming from antiquity. But when you understand that Galatia is in the central part of what is current-day Turkey, you know, in terms of the Mediterranean Sea being to the south of this picture, the Black Sea being to the north, and Galatia kind of, you know, splitting the middle of what we call Asia Minor at that point in time, you know, you see the lines that are there of Paul's first missionary journey. And what's interesting about, you know, the theory of the, you know, him writing to these churches is he engaged with them three times in terms of his first and second missionary journey. That basically Paul, you know, goes through the cities and then doubles back, visit them again, and then for the second missionary journey, goes back again and visits them again. And then again, he's called to, you know, he thinks he's going to go into Asia, but God prevents him from doing that. Eventually, he goes to Troas and in Mysia, and then is called by the Macedonian man. But that's, you know, not substantive to our message this morning. But the main question that comes to us in terms of who these Galatians are, is he talking about ethnic Galatians or provincial Galatians? You know, when you think about who the Galatians were culturally, they were Celtic people. Like, ultimately, the Gauls, who we might be familiar with, that Galatians is named after, were Celtic people. And so the Celts kind of occupied the center of Europe, kind of around Austria, Switzerland. And so basically, in terms of their desire to get more land, and they were warrior people, they kind of went northeast, and, you know, when you talk about England, you talk about Ireland, you talk about the Scots, they were Celtic people, and then they came south in terms of occupying parts of Asia Minor. You know, they had some success in terms of their own warfare, in terms of gaining land, until the Romans came through, and they just controlled the whole world, and that, you know, it's the Romans that kind of defined them. In terms of just with what this area was and what it would be called. So again, if you're talking about ethnic Galatians, you'd be talking about the north of Galatia in terms of them being defined by the culture. If it's provincial Galatians, again, that's more what the Romans declared. It doesn't matter what your culture is. So basically, maybe the bottom line is, if you're talking about the Galatians being the northern Galatian people, they would be defined by more of a pagan culture. Like, you know, barbaric almost in terms of our understanding of what their background would be. If you're talking about the southern Galatians, those would be Romans, those would be Greeks, those would be Jews. A primary road that the Romans established in terms of going from west to east went along that road where these cities are in terms of where Paul visited. And so again, there would be a lot of different kinds of people in those regions. So that's why it becomes important in terms of, you know, what the background is. You know, again, when you think about what substantive in studying the book of Galatians, one, it is Paul ministering to people that, again, are more defined by a culture that's inconsistent with the knowledge of God, or, you know, that maybe not well educated in terms of what the Jews and the Greeks would be compared to the northern Galatians. It also becomes substantive when we think about when Paul wrote the letter. I think most scholars are kind of involved with this study of, is it the North Galatians or the Southern Galatians, to kind of figure out when did Paul write this letter. I mean, it probably was the first, possibly could be the first letter that he wrote. And so therefore, did he write that in the context of his second missionary journey or later than that? So again, just imagine if it is the South Galatians that he's writing to, he visits them one time, two times heading back, then on his second missionary journey comes a third time, and then after he leaves them, he hears about the Judaizers coming and influencing them according to the law. So then he writes that on the context of that second missionary journey. And so therefore, that makes Galatians very early, like 48 AD, 50 AD, in terms of when Paul was writing. If it's the North Galatians, then basically he would be making those churches and establishing ministry there on his second missionary journey. So you understand that? So in other words, when after he visits them on the second missionary journey, he heads north to go west in terms of what he does in Troas and going to Macedonia. So basically on his second missionary journey, he visits these churches, he establishes churches in North Galatia, and now when he writes the letter, has to be later in terms of, now he can't write it on his second missionary journey. He would be going over to, you know, Macedonia and engaging with those churches and so on and so forth. And so therefore, when Paul wrote it and where Paul wrote it becomes substantive in them. So again, are they Celts or Gauls? Are they Jews, Greeks, and Romans? And again, this may be the first letter that Paul writes. So all these things that, you know, you start reading the book, you know, the commentaries in the book of Galatians and all the information that's there in terms of introduction. And again, scholars wrangling over opinions that ultimately don't matter. But like I said, I would want you to be informed in terms of just what issues exist in that. And in terms of my conviction that it is the Southern Galatians, that I do believe the best arguments in terms of who Paul is writing to, who these Galatians are the Southern Galatian peoples. And so the cities that would be defined by the Romans in terms of that area of Galatia. And so therefore, it's the churches that Paul visited in Acts 13 and 14. So again, we're familiar with them. We know them. It's even consistent to think that Luke would be writing accounts of what Paul was doing in churches that he would then write letters to. And so therefore, what stories is Luke going to tell in terms of the ministry of Paul and the things that where he's going and churches he's interacting with, you know, cities that he's going to? Isn't it consistent that Luke would be writing about the cities that Paul would then write letters to? So again, when you think about Paul writing the book of Galatians, you know, I don't even know that we need to define those lines very clearly, but, you know, it's at least to these churches, and whatever northern Galatians or Celtic people would be there as well, I do believe the area that he's writing to, again, are the churches that Paul visits in Acts 13 and 14 on his first missionary journey. So the first city he comes to in Galatia is Pisidian Antioch. Now, you're familiar with the city Antioch that's in Syria, where this church is inspired and the Spirit is working, and Paul and Barnabas are actually called out from that church to be sent out to do this missionary journey. This is not the same Antioch. So just realize that in antiquity and in understanding the geography of that day, again, Antioch would be over here in Syria. Pisidian Antioch is in Asia Minor. But again, it's the first church that he comes to in Acts 13 that would be part of these Galatian churches. So he comes in, as he typically does, in terms of engaging with the synagogue. And it is, but Paul is given permission to speak. So again, he comes and he gives a message in terms of what he would want the Jews to understand in terms of the truth of Jesus and the radical nature of what he brought to them. And so then he's invited back, you know, in terms of them being convinced or wanting to hear more about his message. And what Acts 13 tells us is almost the whole city was there. Everyone wanted to hear this message that Paul brought. And Paul in Pisidian Antioch does what many scholars say is a really good description of a typical message that Paul gave to Jewish believers. Because basically what he does there is he goes right through their history in terms of highlighting different people and different events that define them as a people, but then showing the radical nature of Jesus, how he is completing and defining what the Jews were in terms of what God was calling the Jews to do. That ultimately not engaging with God according to the sacrificial system, not engaging with God according to the law, but according to Jesus and according to the grace that he affords them. And so representative of the message that he did in concluding that is in Acts 13, 38, and 39. And so read it on the screen here or there. It says, "Therefore, my friends, I want you to know that through Jesus, the forgiveness of sins is proclaimed to you. Through him, everyone who believes is set free from every sin, a justification you were not able to obtain under the law of Moses." So again, imagine Paul giving this great message in terms of, hey, Jewish people, you had God interacting with you here. You had Moses, you had David, you had Samuel, you had the law. But guess what? God's doing something different. And what I'm here to declare to you is I bring forgiveness of sins that comes through Jesus, not through sacrificing animals, not through going through to the temple. And so again, the radical nature of that message, I think in some ways that's what we are bringing to everyone as well. When we think about the message we have to people is we come to them with the message of forgiveness of sins. Like otherwise, how are you going to resolve that in your life? How are you going to manage the idea that you do things wrong, and now what makes you right with a God who would be above? If there is a creator God, if there is a God who again, we would be concerned about what he thinks and what relationship we would have with him. And so therefore, how do I get forgiveness from that God? How do I establish something that makes me right with him? Well, the message we have for the world, if you're not a believer in Jesus this morning, it's a message that I bring to you, that forgiveness of sins is offered to you through Jesus Christ, through his death, through his resurrection, in terms of the sin of yours that he bore on his physical body to pay the debt that your sin was owed to God, and Jesus sacrificing himself for that. And so God has forgiveness for you. And outside of that, there is no forgiveness. There's no other way to gain forgiveness of God. So again, that is the message that we bring, that very much like Paul brings in Pisidian Antioch. Many believe, but the Jews bring opposition. And so basically, I think it's in this city where they learned that Paul was going to be stoned. They were going to mistreat him. So he just leaves in cover of night and goes to Iconium, I think, is the next city. And so in Iconium, they do spend considerable time there. The Bible mentions that, so that's unique. He spends more time in Iconium than he did in Pisidian Antioch in terms, again, just arguing with the faith, defending Jesus, explaining the nature of what God is doing through Jesus in completion and in some ways opposition to the message that came from the Old Testament, the Jews. The city was divided, like some believed Paul, some didn't believe Paul. So that happened oftentimes in terms of Paul being in the city. God granted them miracles to show the power that their message had. And again, it's Iconium that they had a plan to stone them, and then they just leave. Like the in Pisidian, that's what it was. They declared the truth of Jesus. They didn't want him there, so they shook the dust off their feet and went to Iconium. But it's in Iconium when they learn about this plan to stone them, and then they leave. So in Lystra and Derbe, again, if you're familiar with these stories in the book of Acts, again, these are the Galatians. So again, when Paul is writing the letter of Galatians, he would be thinking about these interactions. He'd be thinking about times that he had there. He would think about conversations, cultural issues that may have come to them, whether they're from the north, the south, the east, or the west, in terms of coming to these cities in South Galatia, and what truth would he share? What issues would he bring up? And that's why it's significant to look at what Paul's interaction was in the book of Acts with these cities, because it becomes substantive in the context of what he's teaching. You know, something that is significant about the Word of God, and particularly the New Testament, is the Bible is what is called, well, the letters of Paul is what is called occasional literature. And so basically what is significant to that is God addresses the letters of Paul to real people. Like, the truth we have is not a story that comes that is not verifiable in history. That's not like it's, we don't know who the Galatians were or what they were dealing with or you know, where they came from. Like, it's real people dealing with real lives, and God is ministering the context of that. And Paul oftentimes is writing letters for a certain occasion. Like, I heard this about what's going on. Some, for the Galatians, you know, doctrine, the gospel is being compromised. You're being led astray in terms of truth. I need to write a letter. I can't be with you. Spent a lot of time with you, but I can't be with you. I've got to go over here in terms of establishing other churches and sharing the gospel, but I'm going to write you a letter to be the influencer, to express the truth, to be the teacher that God would desire for me to be. So that's what's significant about understanding these cities and what happened. But again, if you're familiar what happened in Lystra and Derbe, you know, they come in, they see a guy that's lame, they say, get up and walk. You know, you're healed. And because of this great healing that happens, they say, the gods are with us. You're the gods of, you know, but Paul, you must be Hermes, because you're the guy that's talking. Barnabas, you must be Zeus. Maybe he was a bigger guy or whatever. They actually start, like, the priest of Zeus comes and brings bulls to offer to Paul and Barnabas. And Paul and Barnabas tear their clothes and say, no, we're men just like you, but we're coming with a message. We're coming with something that you need and understand, not about these gods that are capricious or temperamental or numerous and plenteous in terms of the Greek gods. And so again, they are stoned in Lystra, and it's the significant thing about what happens here is that, okay, again, he presents again, they're there. Again, they think they're gods. Then the Jews come in and dissuade the people, discredit Paul and Barnabas, and then they stone them. So just imagine, 1 week you're a god, the next week you're being stoned. But what's significant about Paul is this is the time where he's stoned, he gets up from being stoned, they left him for dead, he gets up and goes back in the city. Who of us, after being stoned, would go back into the city? But I think Paul was saying, you didn't get me. I'm still alive. Jesus is still better. Hear my message. Believe my message in terms of what I talked about Jesus and the overcoming nature of his power in my life. Representative of what he shared in Lystra and Derbe is in Acts 14, 21 through 25. And just notice the different flavor of what Paul says here. They preach the gospel, again, this is Lystra and Derbe. They preach the gospel in that city and won a large number of disciples. Then they return to Lystra, Iconium, and Antioch. That's them doubling back, strengthening the disciples and encouraging them to remain true to the faith. We must go through many hardships to enter the kingdom of God, they said. Paul and Barnabas appointed elders for them in each church, and with prayer and fasting committed them to the Lord in whom they had put their trust. After going through Pisidia, they came into Pamphylia, and then when they had preached the word in Perga, they went down to Attalia. Did we miss a passage? Can you go back to the slide? Sorry about this. No, Yeah, 14:17. Sorry, 1 to 14:17. Sorry about that. So again, we had a representative message of what Paul brought to a very Jewish city in Pisidian Antioch. This is representative of what he shared with the people that were Greek in nature. And so it's still about the gospel. Like, Paul was very passionate about sharing the gospel. Like, to think about, again, we're studying the book of Galatians. You know, we're looking at the churches that Paul visited that defines the churches he is writing the letter to, and looking at the experiences he had with them. Again, in Pisidian Antioch, a very traditional Jewish message, but here in 14:17, yet he has not left himself without testimony. This is, again, he's now at this point where you think I'm God. I'm not God. I'm here representing God. You need to know him and recognize the word that we bring to you. So God has not left himself without testimony. He has shown kindness by giving you rain from heaven and crops in their season. He provides you with plenty of food and fills your heart with joy. And you see the difference of the message that Paul brings? You know, he was willing to accommodate his message to the understanding and place that people were. To a Jewish audience, I'm going to tell you the history of Judaism and connect Jesus to that. You're not Jewish people, you're Greek people in terms of just the culture that you're in. And so therefore, I'm going to talk to you about the Creator God, the God who is above you, the God who has made himself evident both in the glory of what he has created and the need and dependence you have. Like, everyone recognizes, I need rain to fall, I need crops to grow, I need food for my belly, I need warmth to my body, and yet where does that come from? Well, what's the source of that? Like, what are you trusting in? Again, as these people in Lystra and Derbe are coming in, you're Zeus and you're Hermes, we're worshiping the Roman gods. That is not the true God. That is not the one to be worshipped or regarded or to come to. And so that's the message. Like, the God that gives you rain, the God that gives you food, the God that supplies for your needs, he's the one who we're representing. He's the one you need to turn to. He's the one that you need to believe. And naturally, Jesus is the touch point. Jesus is the mediator of that God. And so you need to come to him. So we won't read that other passage in 14, but what that was intended to be a reinforcement of is just what Paul's strategy was. Like basically, as he's going into these areas, he's not just thinking in terms of, I share the gospel, I save people, and then I leave. Like, again, this is Paul's first missionary journey. This is his first engagement with, again, what is going to define my life? What is going to define my mission? And so right off the bat, in the first cities that Paul interacts with, he's starting churches. He's organizing fellowships. He's appointing elders. He's establishing authority in terms of what protection and guidance would come from that in the cities that he's establishing these churches. So again, these are the people that Paul is now writing this book of Galatians to in terms of the region and the people that are being defined by that. After this first missionary journey is when Paul now returns to Antioch. He goes back to Jerusalem to have the Council of Jerusalem, where now the Jews are asking, what do we do with these Gentiles? Like Paul, you went on this missionary journey and you're ministering to Greeks, you're sharing the gospel. And it was actually in Pisidian Antioch where he says, Jews, if you don't want us, we're going to go to the Gentiles and we're going to minister there. So now the church in Jerusalem is saying, well, what do we do with these Gentiles? What do we require them to do? Should they need to be circumcised? Do they need to obey the law of Moses? And correctly, they come to the conclusion that no, that salvation is by Christ, it's through faith, it's by grace. It's not about being Jewish in order to be saved. It's about being a Christ believer, a Christ follower that's about being saved. And so therefore, so he goes to the Council of Jerusalem, goes back to Antioch, goes on the second missionary journey, and then writes to them, I believe, as he's going up Seeing the Macedonian man being prevented from going into Asia. Read this in the book of Acts if you don't know what I'm talking about. An important part of your history as a believer. But it's then that he writes to them. And so Paul begins the letter in a traditional way, just getting into the book of Galatians. Paul, an apostle, in verse 1, Paul, an apostle, sent not from men nor by man, but by Jesus Christ and God the Father, who raised him from the dead, and all the brothers with me to the churches in Galatia in verse 2. But let's look at the first words that Paul talks about here in terms of defining himself. Again, it's customary to write a letter in this way, introducing yourself, talking to who you're talking to, and then give some sort of gracious offer to them, a declaration to them. Paul wrote 13 letters. In 9 of them, he uses this term apostle. Like sometimes he uses the word apostle and servant, but 9 out of 13 times he uses his word apostle. And 9 out of 10 when he introduces just himself. So basically, there are times where Paul is writing letters to different cities and different people where he just introduces himself and the people with him. Sometimes he just uses the word servant or slave. Sometimes it's apostle. But when he's just introducing himself, like this letter is not from Silas and Timothy. It's not from me, Silas and Timothy. It's just me. So 9 out of the 10 times where he's just introducing himself, he uses the term apostle. And so therefore, Paul, from the outset, needed people to understand who he was. And then what he was in terms of serving Jesus and what authority he had over people in terms of how they would regard what he said. The word apostle comes from 2 Greek words, apo, from, and stelo, to send. And so therefore it could be defined as apostle was a sent one, someone commissioned to represent the sender. So again, that's what apostle means. That again, I'm commissioned by someone. Again, this would be used in the Greek world in terms of what representatives would do, representing a governor or representing the emperor. Again, I'm a sent one. I'm commissioned to give you a message. That's what an apostle was. And so he understood the nature of what that meant for him and what guided and conditioned his life and, again, the role that he would have in the life of others. So apostle was a position of service to the sender, but a position of authority to those to whom he was sent. You know, in some ways, we are all sent ones. We're not all apostles, but we are all sent ones. Like, we have to understand the call that is on each of our lives to represent Jesus in word and deed. God's plan for the salvation of the nations is in the context of the life of believers and their interaction with unbelievers. You know, think about all the ways that God could have saved people. He could have sent Jesus another time. I've always thought that. Why just once? Well, because the work of salvation only needed to be done once. Jesus wouldn't have to hang on. But, you know, every 100 years, Jesus, shows up in the sky, believe in me. You know, God doing miraculous things to clearly show to the world, a trumpet from heaven. Here's a message from God. Lots of ways that God could have caused people to know him, to understand who he was, to want to believe, to recognize the value and the validity to believe. And it's you, it's me, it's us that are the sent ones. That we are the ones commissioned by God with the message that we have for people. We just don't come with the same authority that Paul had in terms of being an apostle. Now, the apostles were a group of men raised up by Jesus to fill a particular purpose in his church. In fact, the requirements to be an apostle was to have seen Christ and be ordained by him to be an apostle. So therefore, there are no apostles today. And so we have to be suspect of people that call themselves apostles. Now, I would recognize some role that people have as you become the sending church of other churches. And now maybe there's some authority you have in terms of pastors that you're raising up, to start other churches, so there's some connection or authority or influence you would have. But that is apostolic in nature, but it's not an apostle. Like, again, you can't say that you have seen Jesus. Jesus has not revealed himself to you. And if you claim that he did, we probably need verification in terms of whatever you're saying is happening to you subjectively. And so I would be amongst those that would say there are no more apostles today, but the apostles have done the work that God called them to do, that he sent them and commissioned them for. And so what purpose did the apostles fulfill? I mean, they led the church. They were the ones that guided them in terms of decisions that need to be made or influences that were coming in, recognizing the things that were a problem that need to be addressed. You know, when the Grecian women and the Hebrew women were having issue in terms of the distribution of food, you know, they came to the apostles in terms of, what are you going to do about this? How are you going to manage this? And the apostles made a decision in raising up deacons to serve in that capacity. They taught the church. Again, they were the ones that, again, knew the word, knew Jesus, knew what Jesus said, were able to communicate that and what was important for the church to understand about Jesus. In fact, in that interaction, in terms of raising up deacons to manage that issue between people, what did the apostles say? That our ministry is the prayer and the word. That is significant enough. That you might want me out there managing this and managing that, but the most important thing I can do is I can pray and I can study. I can make sure that that word is not just something that is in my head, but in my heart. Well, your heart is in your head. That it's flowing through me, that it's influencing me, that's defining who I am. That it's not something I have to search for. It's something that is alive in my heart. And that's what the apostles desire to do. Like, here are the people that live with Jesus, but they saw a need to engage in the word in a different way, and seeing some logistical things as being things that were a disruption to that. And so, again, they saw the importance of them teaching the church. They planted churches and oversaw them. And then they wrote the Bible. So again, that's what the apostles were commissioned to do, and that's what they did well. I mean, Paul realized he was only as good as the one who sent him. You know, when it says, Paul, an apostle, sent not from men nor by man, but by Jesus Christ and God the Father. And so again, he realized he was only good as the one who sent him. I think that's true of everyone that would represent God and be commissioned by him. But notice Paul starts off by saying who he is not sent not by man, nor not from men, nor by man. You know, you think about how this empowers and affirms the authority that he has. You know, I'm not speaking for myself. I'm not representing me. I'm not trying to get done what I feel like I want to get done. I'm here based in what God has declared and what he has done and what he would want to communicate. And so again, it's not my idea. It's not people's idea. Like, it's not other people that have come into your fellowship, he would say to the Galatians and all these cities that will be involved, and they're deceiving you. They're coming with manly concepts to lead you away from the truth of God and to realize that I, Paul, have authority to speak in your life because I'm not sent by men. It's not like there's an assembly of people that have come to and say, you know, Paul, you're the apostle, go. That I'm here because God has sent me and God has given me a message to give to you. But then not only sent by Jesus, but also by God the Father who raised Jesus. Do you see how that just further affirms the nature of the authority that Paul has? Now, like, it's not only by Jesus. Like, if he went with Jesus by him alone, that would be enough, right? But it's not just Jesus Christ. That it's God the Father that has sent him, that is empowered, that's at the backdrop of who he is. And so again, just reinforcing the authority that Paul would have to speak into the Galatians' life. I mean, Paul is not pulling any punches here. He's going to need to be firm with these Galatians And so it starts by establishing his authority to do so, but not coming with his words, but God's word. And so again, not only Jesus, not only God the Father, but who raised him from the dead. Again, all these conditions of power and authority that Paul is pointing to. And what I would ask you in terms of just the nature of authority and what we believe about the authority that would be over us. Because as you think about authority, in some ways authority is something that can flow from the person under authority. Like in other words, you could go to someone and say, I give you permission to have authority over me. But the only authority you have is what I allow you to have. And so therefore, what I'm asking you is the authority that God has over you, is it subjective in nature or is it objective in nature? Is it qualified by who you are or qualified by who he is? And I think a lot of times what we do in going before God is we say, God, I'll give you whatever authority I'll allow you to have. So again, you have as much authority as you have that I give you. But we have to recognize that is not the nature of authority. So now translate that to other authority that God has established on the earth and other things that you might interact with the authority that has come from God. Do you qualify that authority according to you only have authority as much as I give you authority? Or is there something that is unqualified, like in other words, is not dependent on anything in terms of the world on the earth, but dependent on God? And so therefore, the authority that Paul has and what he's saying is, I don't have authority because you give me authority. I have authority because God has given me authority. But we have to make a decision about whether that's true. Do you recognize the authority that God has established on the earth where now that authority is regarded and respected because of what God has said and your worship and recognition of him, as opposed to you saying, you can have authority as much as I let you? Because really what it comes down to is authority is most importantly expressed when you don't like it. Like if I tell you what you want to hear, if Paul tells the Galatians what they want to hear, if God tells you what you want to hear, I like that. Yeah, God, you can have authority over that. But how about when God speaks and you don't like what he says? We have to understand that that's the rub of authority. Like outside of you regarding God in that context, you're really not regarding God as having authority. Like then translate that to Paul in terms of what he's communicating. Like Galatians, are you going to believe me only to the extent that you give me permission to speak into your life? Or are you going to recognize that I have an unconnected, uncontrovertible nature of authority that comes from God that, again, it's there. Now you have to believe it. You have to accept it. But it's not based in what you think of Paul. It's what you think of God. And do you believe that Paul has that authority from God so that now when Paul speaks in a way that is inconsistent with what you want, are you going to believe him because he's the one in authority? But we have to recognize that is the nature of authority. The nature of authority is when it rubs us the wrong way, where we're hearing things we don't like and we don't want. But God has established authority on this earth so things would be organized. Things would be led in a way that God would desire. And so are we willing to put ourselves under that authority? You know, in some ways I never seek to like press my authority in terms of what role I have. And yet there are times where I have to engage in situations, and I'm only bringing it up because it's here in the Bible. Like it's a point to make that the person in the church that would be more in line, again, I'm not an apostle, but in terms of the authority that God would have to me in the context of the church. And as Paul, again, is establishing authority, because the Galatians, I'm going to tell you things you don't want to hear and you don't want to be confronted with, but I'm going to deal with it. There are times where I need to speak into situations where, hey, this is what's up. This is what the Bible says. This is what you need to do. This is what the church needs to do in response to what you're doing. And you can't expect that to be comfortable. But we have to recognize that God has established authority to do that very thing. And what you have to decide is, to what extent do you recognize that authority is here because of God, as opposed to you getting giving permission? I mean, you get what I'm saying, right? In other words, like, you, when you give, like, it's not authority if you give people permission to have authority. You're the one that's in authority. But when we recognize the authority that God has declared, now I recognize God's authority over all things, and now what would I be in the context of that? Now, I do believe that whenever the Bible would ever talk about authority that a person would have, that authority is more for the benefit of people. It's more for the service of people. Like, I would always use my authority in the context of truth and guiding truth, reinforcing truth, applying truth. I would never use authority that I have to be the first one in the buffet line, or you have to give a certain amount of money, or I better have this kind of watch. No. It's always about how much are you engaging with the Word of God, what truth are you living in, and what authority that I would have to speak on God's behalf into your life to say, you're doing it wrong. You've got to go this way, not that way. And I think that's what Paul is certainly declaring that authority for himself and defining it in harsh, well, it's powerful terms, wonderful terms. Again, not sent from men, not by men, but by Jesus Christ, by God the Father. You know, he's the guy that rose Jesus from the dead. And so it's his power that I operate under. It's his authority that I bring to you. And that's how Paul starts off this book of Galatians. And that's what we will end with in terms of our study. Well, yeah, I won't go with the brothers with me. But again, he also mentions the fellowship of people that he's with. But let's bow and let's pray. And so, Father, we are grateful for all the things that are established in your word and by your word. The things we would understand about cultures in the past and who the people are and what would define the way we understand what Paul is communicating to them. I thank you for Paul, and I thank you for his willingness to share the good news of Jesus in these regions that did not know him, and yet on the cutting line, declaring the truth of Christ and drawing people to faith, and you generating faith in people's hearts that they would come and believe and become part of the church and define and establish what your work in the world would be. Father, in many ways, we are
you
what
pulled
we are
me from darkness
on that first missionary
and clothed me in garments of praise.
We are the way we are because of
Jesus forever. I'm living in freedom. You've taken my burdens away. Jesus forever. My song will be only for you. For the cross that you bore. This is the reason I sing.